Time to take the bread out of the oven. I never met Margaret Maurer. She's a founding member of this congregation. She died in 2011 at the age of 101. Despite having never met her, we all have benefited from her legacy. Thanks to an incredibly generous bequest she made upon her death, the Unitarian Society has a solid endowment. And it is thanks to her that we have new stairways built last year. Before I ever even stepped here, I understand the last ones, you kind of took your life into your own hands. So thank you. It's thanks to her that at some time, hopefully in the near future, we will have new flooring in the lobby and new doors more appropriate than these awkward accordion doors that never cooperate. And we also have, thanks to Margaret, a history of social justice at this congregation, documenting from its inception in the mid-50s up until 1980 when the document was written. And I've been reading this, and if any of you have been in conversation with me in the past couple of weeks, I've been like, did you know this? Yeah, okay, thanks, Karen. So this morning I want to share with you some modern history of our faith movement and how it came to be embodied in this congregation and how it is still very much alive and electric today. Originally, I had planned to talk about the rise of authoritarianism, and it's not like that's not a worthy topic. But instead, today the sermon will be about the shifting grounds beneath us, but from a different, still related angle, the systems that center the white experience, building walls that preclude full involvement of people of color, as well as how we can and must dismantle it, continuing to try, falling short, and hearing the call to try again. So if you look around the room at the faces of your fellow congregants here, you will notice, or notice for the thousandth time, that we are a congregation that is majority white. And so honored and pleased to have some of us be people of color. And though Unitarian Universalism comes from a historically segregated tradition, as all Christian religions in this country do, we state over and over that we are committed to ending oppression in general and eliminating racism in particular. And so we sit wondering, how do these two realities coexist? Over and over, this faith I love and am committed to, have grounded my life in, and will stick with, we fall short of living our faith out loud. And we showed this yet again in the recent hiring of the regional lead in the southern region of our association. There were two finalists for the positions, both of whom have long pedigrees of serving our faith movement, including both until recently serving as trustees on the Unitarian Universalist Association's board. And the UUA hired the white male minister who doesn't live in that geographical region nor intends to move there over a candidate of color, a religious educator who lives in the region, who is eminently qualified for the position, but was told they were choosing based on a good fit for the team. From listening to my colleagues and friends of color, I have learned that phrase, the right fit, is code. Code for preferring to prioritize or center those skills, styles, approaches that typify white culture, often white male culture, and therefore white candidates. It's a form of, and I'm going to use a strong phrase here, so notice your own reaction to it. It's a form of white supremacy. Not the cross-burning KKK kind, that's for sure, but a dynamic that perpetuates white and male culture as the measurement by which we measure preferred leadership. White supremacy. For some, there is an immediate reaction to defend against this information and any other that comes. And if that is your reaction, I ask you to notice, to breathe, and to see if you can set it aside and stay open. Particularly for white people, our tendency is to react to criticisms about race from people of color in particular, by bringing a defensive reaction. I don't have anything on my face. I ask you to listen to this definition offered by Kenny Wiley, one of our current most engaged, powerful religious leaders of color. He wrote, "Why white supremacy here as the term? It conjures up hoods and mobs. But here we mean white supremacy as a set of institutional assumptions and practices, often operating unconsciously, that tend to benefit white people and exclude people of color." Now, it's true, you don't have to be white to be defensive, as the letter from the recently resigned president of the UUA, Reverend Peter Morales, shows. He's Latino. But the white version, or the male version, or the heterosexual version, when it comes to having persistent patterns of oppression pointed out to us, these are particularly problematic. It's like having someone helpfully raise a mirror to our face to show us that there's some dirt there and responding with denial or hurt feelings. How dare you tell me? Or blaming the messenger or taking your toys home and going and playing by yourself rather than saying, "Yep, there's that dirt again. Thought I took care of that. Thank you for telling me. Let's clean it off together." On a side note, if I am ever talking to you and I have something between my teeth, like broccoli, right, please tell me. It will save me further embarrassment. And after an initial moment of awkwardness, I will thank you. On a more real note, if you see patterns emerging that concern you as racist, please tell me. Please tell the leadership here what you are seeing. Help me, help us to see it too. So here are some key facts in the last few weeks in the UU universe, and I recognize that you all have not been like breathing this in the way that I have, as most ministers and religious leaders have in the past few days and few weeks. In response to that hiring decision for the Southern Regional Lead, some UUs of color were clear-sighted and called for our attention to hiring patterns at the UUA that is one of many indications that racial justice is not alive, and despite our declarations otherwise. Christina Rivera wrote, "The most recent census data, which is for 2015, that's available, tells us that 83% of the service workers at the UUA are people of color. It also tells us that of the 49 positions of UUA executive and first management level, 42 are held by white people. 86%, almost the exact inverse." So we'll hear the UUA saying, "Look, we're hiring more," but you have to drill down deeper. And there are good people at the UUA. This is not a critique of them. This is a systems problem. While still president, Morales responded in a letter addressing the critique being leveled, using the word hysteria to describe those who were raising criticism. These are women of color. This did not go over well, because hysteria is yet another code word, right? letters and public statements from ministers, from white religious leaders, from ministers of color, from the organization Black Lives of UU, which has called this a moment of crisis for our faith, have been issued, as well as individuals who have spoken out about the future of our faith movement. And so have all three of the presidential candidates who are running and will be elected in June. And all of this at such a rapid pace that social media allows. And the UU World last Monday offered a summary online. I sent you that link so you can begin to understand it. But seriously, that was 6 days ago, and so much happened so quickly. And so what? What to do with all of this? Do we take our toys home and play by ourselves? Do we get mad at those who are telling us that we have dirt on our face? And what does it mean here for our lives at TUS? What can we do about this if we are at all interested? Ginny Funcorter, former UUA moderator, recently wrote this: "The UUA is drowning in a sea of whiteness, and we don't even notice. This is an attribute of white supremacy culture. And more often than I'd care to admit, that's me not noticing." A few months after I began serving here, I mentioned to a friend that in the first month I was here, I was part of hiring three new staff out of three. If you don't count me. And it was a source of pride. It is a source of pride. And my friend, who knows me well, spoke of how I must have used my anti-racist values to impact that process. It was then and only then that I realized the obvious. We are a staff of white people, not the Montessori school, but the staff of this congregation. We are white. And we can say, like the comic Seinfeld says, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I have to acknowledge, I didn't see it. And it's not like we chose not to hire people of color. Our pools were incredibly small. But I didn't see it. I didn't notice it. And if I didn't see it, how could I, as head of staff, as minister here, pay attention to how that impacts our collective lives? How that continues a way of seeing things that perpetuates white centricity? How that impacts the people of color when they worship here, whether it's just once and then do not return, or who come and choose this as their spiritual home? And so I think, given that we will be hiring a new music director, we might want to think about what we can learn from that mirror being held up. What can we do? As Adam Dyer, the author of our earlier reading today, wrote, "Once again, we are being asked to look deeply at the self-perpetuating patterns of white supremacy that continue to dog our efforts to be multicultural." Or as Reverend Erica Hewitt, who will be giving the sermon at the installation at the end of the month, wrote, "When our congregations, our leaders, and our governance structures reveal themselves as riddled with walls that keep people of color away from power and authority, our agency as white people arises from the humility to understand this truth as our own and make all necessary changes in order to live out our values out loud." So what can we do? How can we build a new way? That's the hashtag that is being used for all these calls for justice, hashtag building a new way, which is a hymn in the Teal hymnal. We are building a new way, getting stronger every day. We are building a new way. And it just so happens to be one of the hymns that we will be singing at the installation. Good timing. We can ask The TUS delegates to General Assembly, our annual national gathering that happens at the end of June, we can ask them about their vote for the new president and ask them to pay attention to the candidates' plans to address systems of white supremacy at the UUA and in our wider faith movement. And we can plan to have folks who attend GA as delegates, either on or off-site, report back to the congregation later in the summer about how all this is playing out. We can support efforts to keep the UUA accountable for promises it makes, paying attention after the fires of crisis have died down. We haven't been so good at that, but we can get better, because accountability is one of the hallmarks of a healthy covenantal system. The UUA is actually the UUOC, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. It can only do what congregations allow it to do through our attention or inattention, and through paying our fair share of dues in order to ensure a robust national association that serves. We can commit to attending to issues of racial justice, of patterns of white supremacy in our own front and backyards. We can look at it in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces, but we must look here. What does it look like in our worship services? The music we play, the sources we go to, the topics we choose? What does it look like in our religious education? How are we serving our children of color? How are we equipping our white children to be able to engage in a multicultural world? For that matter, how are we equipping adults, especially our white adults, to be able to engage in a multicultural world without defensiveness or fragility, without sitting on past laurels or outdated ideas of what racial justice or white supremacy look like? Black Lives of UU has put out a call to congregations to hold a hashtag white supremacy teach-in. A growing group of congregations is committing to shift worship programming to cover racism and white supremacy. And though this call is to do this either on April 30th or May 7th, our service today is a response to that call. Still, someone here or someone's here might agree to look at the resources that will be offered soon on their website and host a conversation on this worthy topic. Yesterday, several of us attended the live streaming of a forum of the UUA presidential candidates. There are three of them, all white women. For the first time in our history, we'll have a woman president. And we drove all the way to our sibling congregation in Lincroft to be able to watch with other UUs, not to be alone, and to hear what people are thinking. I was struck that one of the candidates said this. It resonated strongly for me. She said, "I believe in our ability to make this moment valuable, a turning point. Yet, if we miss this opportunity, friends, I doubt our ability to survive. Now is the time." It's hard to hear those words, but there's some important truth for us to engage in there. So what can we do on these grounds shifting beneath us? At the very least, and at the very most, we can be open and willing. As the song tells us, "For to be hopeless would seem so strange. It dishonors those who go before us. So lift me up, lift us up to the light of change." Blessed be. and amen.